Is that the same one that we went to all those years ago, or is it a different?
It's the one that's in the on the corner, in,
yeah,
like the right in the center of Little India. Yeah.
Okay.
Same one.
Yeah, it's same one. It's got the lamb or
yeah,
it's goat biryani. Yeah. It's
really, you know, good. Where we originally got that recommendation?
Where?
Anthony Bourdain.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 604 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Foz Mamoon and Mr. Seth Miller. We're recording this on Labor Day, gentlemen.
I would like to point out that I think it's my fault that we're laboring on Labor Day, and I appreciate your cooperation.
I'm fine with it. Otherwise, we're going to be sitting around.
Yeah, but it's the point of Labor Day is no labor.
Well, this is still sitting around. I get to just talk to you guys. It's a plus.
Fair enough.
I think the big news is there was runway overrun. We'll call it a crash in Miami. Amazon Air, which was operated by 21 Air, which is actually another airline. Like, there's a bunch of stuff going on with this. It came in high and fast from the looks of it. Overran the runway. 5 people are dead. There's about the same number in critical condition right now. Not good.
I think it was on runway 30, right?
Going yes. West. Which apparently isn't used very often.
They say that. I have like a 50% chance of every time I go to Miami, I end up on 30.
Okay. It's like a cross runway there. So it's not the one of the more, it's not one of the longer ones, I guess. But also, this like went off the end across a road into a parking lot.
And apparently in that process, it took out the ILS for 2 different runways.
Ooh.
Because there's a crossing runway at the end of it.
Yeah.
I think
the northern runways intersect it.
Yeah. Eight right. So it took out the ILS for 8 right and the ILS for its own runway. So.
Damn.
Yeah. And then it hit like there's a road. It's a fairly big road, like 4-lane road, outside of the airport. And they were going pretty fast.
Yeah.
When they went through it.
Did we, and I apologize, I didn't look at too many of the details after the initial reports. Did they confirm where the fatalities in the plane or on the ground? Do we even know?
They haven't said. Okay. I think everyone assumes on the ground, like in cars. It was reported that they did hit vehicles.
Yeah.
So, oddly enough, part of at the end of that runway is one of the Amazon, like, warehouses. So it's not good. And I think they came, if you look at the video, there's multiple videos and one of them is of the approach and the landing itself. They were definitely like nose down towards the runway at like 50 feet above the runway. So definitely chasing the approach, which is what happens when you get a too fast, too high and you're trying to get down low to land. And then they just came in fast. I never saw them deploy the reversers, the thrust reversers or the actual spoilers, like none of that stuff came up or showed up in any of the videos I've seen so far. And then when the plane came to rest, one of the engines was knocked off. So I couldn't see there, like if the thrust reversers were deployed, but it was rainy. It was stormy at Miami. All around, not a good situation. Any comments?
Very sad.
Yep. So, I mean, in Miami shut down yesterday for quite a while while this was being dealt with and, a lot of diversions to Orlando.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of wide bodies went up to Orlando. I saw BA, Virgin, ETA, and Lufty all went there. I think a Copa, not a wide body, but still. Smaller planes hit Naples, Palm Beach. Interestingly, you mentioned the storms. Like Wallace was happening, Fort Lauderdale was under a giant red blob on the map. So it didn't take any of the diversions, at least not initially.
I mean, you seen the video when they're coming in, it is pitch black behind the plane.
So. Yeah. I think it was a little off the way, but, there certainly have been some speculation that contributed just in terms of passengers wanting to get on the ground or pilots wanting to get on the ground.
Yep. Yep. So just not good news and really screwing things up in Florida. So,
yeah.
Blue First. JetBlue's new first class product. The details are out, or some of the details.
We now know what it's going to look like.
And we know the name. I feel like it's a terrible name. Can we talk about that first?
Sure.
Blue First. I mean, it's like, all right, we get it as first class, but they being JetBlue, I would have figured they would have come up with something a little more
witty.
Witty or catchy, you know, I don't know.
Why do you even need a special name?
It's just first.
Yeah.
Well, why do you call it Comfort Plus instead of Extra Legroom? Why do you call it Delta Select instead of Premium Economy? Why do you call it Delta One instead of Business Class? With the business class ones, at least, right? Business First also, back in the day with Continental, it made sense because you were going for a marketing approach or upper class from Virgin. You wanted it to be business class because that's what expense accounts allowed, but you wanted people not to think of it as business class. You wanted them to think of it as more premium than that. In this case, you've taken the word that's sort of verboten and put it in the name anyways. So I don't know why we bothered.
And I saw someone actually suggest, maybe it was Jason, put on Blue Sky. One of his ideas was Mini Mint, which I actually thought that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when it was first teased long ago, Junior Mint was the idea. And of course, I
think marks.
Tootsie Roll Company owns that one. People are like, hey, just got a marketing partnership set up. Like, easier said than done, my friends. But yeah, that would have been an interesting one. I don't know. Like, I agree. If you're going to call it something else, like, come up with something more creative than Blue First, because like even more space. I don't know.
Like, yeah, it's like Blue First just makes me, my brain immediately goes to Blue Origin for some reason, because like you're putting blue and I'm like, it's not a rocket ship, but it just might be, yeah. That's the way my brain works. So
it's, I mean, and that's the other thing. So, right. It's not a rocket ship. It is a pair. It's a couple rows of 2-2 seating that looks like almost every other first class seat on the market. Upgraded to 13-inch screens for the IFE. So that's nice. These will be the only screens in the JetBlue fleet that have Bluetooth pairing, which is a little surprising, that the others do not, but, that is a nice upgrade.
That actually gives someone a chance to be able to pair their headphones.
Yeah.
A chance.
A chance.
I take it you're not a fan of this.
I've just not had that much luck. Like, sometimes it works great and other times it does not work. And then I fly Alaska, which doesn't have it at all. So it doesn't matter.
There you go.
I get great amusement watching people spend half their flight trying to pair their headphones to the screen.
I saw someone, I sat next to a woman who was trying to pair her, she was hard of hearing. She was trying to pair her Bluetooth earpieces that she uses for hearing as hearing aids to the thing. And I'm like, I don't think it's going to work. Like, it's just, that's not how those work. They use a special channel on the phone for that function. Like, it's, I actually looked it up in flight and was like, it's not going to work because they don't use real Bluetooth. They use a different signal that's
interesting.
Commercial. So
it's not flagged as a headphones.
It's not, right. Yeah, it's like a different channel within the Bluetooth, yeah. Range.
Yeah. There's also like, I know that there's a device identifies itself as a certain type of thing.
Yeah.
Right. It can be headphones. It can be speakers. It can be like whatever headphone microphone combo for talking. And so depending on which of those it picks and it identifies at, the systems will not work. And I raised the main reason I know this. I raised this with one of the vendors once. I'm like, what happens when someone brings their like speaker thing on board and pairs and decides they're going to blast audio? They're like, no, we have a way around. Like, they vaguely have a way to solve that.
Well, and this woman was talking to me. She was like, oh, but it works with my iPhone. Like, I can pair it with my iPhone. I'm like, yeah, but it uses something in the iPhone. Like, it's a specific technology in phones to allow you that the user that's hard of hearing to hear that. This is just a TV screen.
Yeah.
It's not going to work the same way. Anyway. It's interesting.
Those are all good things. There are no ovens on board because JetBlue doesn't have ovens on most of its planes. They're going with cold meals in first class only on flights more than 899 miles, which is about 2/3 of their routes. Obviously back out the ones that are mint, but about 2/3 of the routes are going to qualify for food in first class.
Why 899? Why not just say 900 or more?
I don't know.
It's like some carve out. Like Florida, there's like one part of Florida and it's like, oh, we can just get rid of Florida off the list.
This one's 898.8. No, we can't do that one.
Yeah. Make it 899. So you're saying they're going to serve like cold meals like on everything outside of those or longer than 899?
Yeah.
So things like transcons and things will get these meals that they do out of like, say, Boston to Portland.
Well, transcons already have mint, right?
Well, not Boston to Portland.
Okay. There's a few of the routes that don't have mint. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, arguably most, right? It's mint is JFK to LA, San Francisco, some Vegas, Boston, same, and Fort Lauderdale, same. And I don't even think it's all the Fort Lauderdale's. Maybe some Phoenix in the winter gets mint, if I remember correctly. But yeah, a lot of routes don't.
Yeah, San Diego had some mint too.
It has in the past. I don't know where it's at these days. I took it. I did that one because it was cheaper. I drove down from LA to do it.
Is there anything special about the seats? Like besides the screens and stuff? Is it got boot rests? Is it?
No.
No, just kind of a normal F product.
Yeah, it's a domestic F product. And it's interesting, I will say, Brett Snyder, Cranky Flyer, wrote a piece basically saying JetBlue is going to mint cash, pardon the pun, with these seats. And I think he's probably right. I think this offers an upsell in a way that will be useful. One of the biggest challenges that these present is economy drops from, 32 to 40, 34 inches down to 30 to 31 because they had to make room for these. And so you're losing a bunch of leg room for regular passengers. So that whole most leg room throughout coach kind of thing, JetBlue finally has to drop that from its marketing shtick. And, that's bad news for a lot of passengers. So the question is, does that start to push more people to buy even more space or Blue First? And then also, does it cause people to not buy JetBlue because it's no longer, you get the free extra legroom and you get free Wi-Fi? If those things aren't both true, would you now go look at a different airline, especially since most of the competitors now are also offering free Wi-Fi, who have Wi-Fi, it's free. Do you start looking at others maybe, and does that hurt them? But I tend to agree with Brett's analysis that it sucks for the folks in the back, that JetBlue is going to make plenty of money doing this. It is a smart shift in the mix of seats that they're offering, but mostly because they're doing it without taking seats off the plane.
What do you think, Foz? Do you think they mint money?
Maybe. I mean, I think JetBlue has a pretty loyal following. And I think part of it is the comfort aspect. If that goes away, do they alienate some of their core customer base?
Yeah. Core customers that only pay for coach type thing.
Yeah. Well, most of them only pay for coach because they're flying in single cabin planes.
Yeah. And JetBlue customers, more or less by definition, are coach passengers.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean is these aren't customers that are going out of their way to buy an F product out of Newark, so let's say, right? Where right. JetBlue and United are competing on a route. They're just going to buy the JetBlue flight because it's perfectly fine for what they want. And now that product is going to become less comfortable.
Yeah.
And does it push their passengers to other carriers in the process?
Which carrier, though, has more legroom, I guess?
It's not so much legroom. It's overall amenities. So you're going Newark to Orlando. Historically, you've gone JetBlue because you've had extra comfort. But now you can go United and have a lot more flight options.
Like more flights per day.
More flights per day. And recovery is always easier, too.
Yeah, that was the part. And the counter to that is, does having an F seat now make JetBlue more attractive for a different subset of passengers that wants a more premium and has been, air quotes, slumming it with other airlines? I think probably not. I don't think this is enough to move that needle. I mean, it is an F product. So if someone decided the JetBlue one was, made sense and was cheap enough, I guess, and fit the timeline, maybe it would work, but.
I think that's an interesting question of how they fare it, right? If they're going to just match the fares of everyone else, I think they don't have an advantage.
Right.
I think it's good news for JetBlue. I'll be interested to see when do they start installing this, I guess, is a question. And when do we expect to see planes flying?
Before the end of the year, I think they announced it so that when they start to put it into the GDS, into the sales platforms, it's not a surprise to anyone. But they have not loaded it yet, as far as I know.
Okay. Because I would be interested to see what the sales look like, a month after this goes on the market, what they're selling it as and how much of it's getting bought. And then maybe 6 months in, how's it doing? That'd be my.
But is it going to be enough to save JetBlue? Or is it too little too late?
I'll leave it.
And it's going to take a while.
But do you think it can save it? Do you think having F is a way of saving JetBlue?
I think it pushes the revenue higher. I feel like I don't know how much, but I agree with Brett's idea that it definitely pushes the revenue average per aircraft up. So I think that helps. Obviously, it costs money to put them in, differentiated service, et cetera, et cetera. But I think overall, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah. Is it a two or three rows of F that they're putting
in? Three on the 320s, I think.
Is it going on any of the 321s?
If you go on the 321s, it's going to go on the 220s too.
Okay.
I think a 320 is up first.
Let's talk about American Airlines flagship flip. What's going on here?
Flagship First is dead, baby. Long live Flagship Business Class.
I mean, is it completely gone? Like, are all the planes that had F in them?
They're not all gone yet, but it is officially going away. And we've known it's going away, but it is, you know, the timing is now explicitly known. And I'm finding the stupid thing here. The first flight with the new 77W, was September 2nd. They did a media flight from Dallas to JFK, and then it flew JFK to Buenos Aires. I'm sure the producer's happy about that. But beyond that, where the hell's the dates in this thing? I don't see them in the press release. Oh, here we go. First will no longer be available for purchase on 77W aircraft for travel beginning November 19th. And as the XLR joins the fleet in greater numbers, First will no longer be purchasable for transcon routes as of March 28th, 2027. And I didn't realize we actually still get an occasional XLR on Boston, LA, because they're still trying to make that happen. But
that was actually one of the routings American offered me, was Portland, LA to Boston. I thought that was interesting. And it was well priced for a premium product.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right. Like the new cabin is a nice business class cabin, and they've got that front row flagship suite going on. Unlike United, they're not doing special service for it. So that's an interesting, or, you know, true premium pricing on it. So that's interesting. And I know Foz, you got to experience that the other day. So we're going to talk about that in the bonus topics, but, upgraded Wi-Fi on board. So they've flipped those planes to Viasat as part of the conversion. And it's free now, which is nice. Those used to be Panasonic and paid. I don't know. The other stuff is.
And that's typical. That was one of Foz's complaints with American, was like a lot of their long haul fleet, you paid for Wi-Fi and it was kind of really mediocre.
Yes.
On the long haul birds.
But yeah.
It's a good change.
So sorry to answer that. The newer 787s were coming pre-installed with Viasat. The older planes, and I want to say there's about 90 of them, were Panasonic. They have been announced as converting to Viasat. That progress is underway.
Okay.
Like this, it'll be interesting to see, because a bunch of planes were also flagged now to go to Starlink, you know, what the timing is and how, if that actually comes across as expected or if things shift, but that's where we're at.
But Starlink is only the 321s, right?
There's 500 and it's the 320 family, if I remember correctly. Okay. It's a bunch of planes that are, 2KU today plus some others, but yeah.
And then you have a note in here in our notes. You say stupid ways of counting premium.
So, this plane is obscenely premium heavy.
The 77W.
The 77W, that's re-entered service, right? It's 70 business class seats, 44 premium economy. That is a lot of premium by any measure. For reasons that frustrate and annoy me, American is also counting its main cabin extra as premium seating. So that's another 30 seats, which is basically just the front rows, exit rows and whatnot in the economy class cabins. But they're counting that anyways. And like, I understand there's extra legroom there. I really don't like calling it, a premium seat, but I have lost that battle for the most part. It's a weird one where like Delta was selling Comfort Plus, which was their extra legroom, as premium economy for a while. And then they stopped doing that as they put real premium economy on domestic planes, and started flying more wide bodies on domestic routes and things like that. There's been some weird shifts around that, but as Delta stopped, United and JetBlue started selling it that way in some bundles. So there's certain times where if you're like searching on Google Flights and you put in premium economy, in some markets, they'll sell you Economy Plus or JetBlue's Even More Space as an Economy Plus product, or as a premium economy product. And this would get potentially counted that way, but not really, because these planes already have premium economy. So like, it's stupid to me in that sense. Also, if you include those seats, Delta's A350-1000 is actually going to be more premium than American's new 77W as soon as it enters service. If you exclude those seats, American would have been able to keep the title, and American was going to win either way, because with 114 business and premium economy, it is the most premium cabin out there. Like, I feel like that was just a marketing miss, because they would have been able to hold it. And now when Delta's plane comes out, they'll no longer be able to claim this, versus if they hadn't included the 30, they would have still held it.
They'll just change the name of the game.
Sure, but like, why set yourself up that you have to make a change versus saying we're the most premium 114 instead of most premium 144? Oh, never mind. It's now most premium 114 and those other ones don't count. Like, why create a world that you've got to fight it?
Because you just defined Americans' entire business strategy.
Creating a world where you have to fight?
Yes. Something you have to keep going back and keep revisiting and revising.
We love Chicago. We will never leave Chicago. And open hand.
Let's just throw a Narita fight in there to make it seem like we care.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's wild. I'm looking at the seat map. Business class goes back halfway over the wing.
Yeah.
That is, it's insane. And then premium economy has the two window sides, the two
outboard,
they start at the exit, the third exit row.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that is just, that is a crazy amount of people in premium cabins. Yeah.
I mean, I say, like, back to the wing, though, I feel like that's, I'm trying to check it, like a 77W on BA.
Similar.
I mean, the BA 77W puts business class through, it's row 24, goes to the back of the wing.
It's like the high J on United on the 763s, goes all the way through the wing.
Yeah. It's just that there's not as, the 763 is just a smaller plane.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and BA has F on those.
NBA does have F on those planes. But yeah, I'm looking at 124 premium seats. If you buy, and that's without counting, just legroom. So BA beats, American by 10. If we exclude the extra legroom at the front of the exit row, but
that's wild. I mean, I was, you know, what's crazy is I was on a 77W. I think I did LA London on BA and one of our friends said, hey, take the front business class cabin, take the very front.
The main
and one? I did. Yeah. The one 5 through 7, yeah. Little mini cabin. And I took it and you would never know another person was on the airplane. Like it felt like because it had the exit row behind you and then it had first in front of me. It was like, it was great. I never even knew those people were back there.
Yeah. Well, it's like flying in a 380. If you go in, if you board straight to the upper deck, like you wouldn't even know there was 300 or 400 more people downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's very true. It's wild. All right. What else we got here to talk about?
Oh, more planes.
Oh, they're getting more planes.
Well, yeah.
Rumored.
Maybe.
They're finally going to get more wide bodies.
Whose wide bodies are they buying?
That's the wild card. I've heard they haven't defined which one, but some people are saying it might be a 330neo.
Really? That would be a huge shift for them.
It would.
I mean, bringing back the 330 fleet, thanks US Airways. I don't hate that as a solution for them, right? In a lot of cases, they don't do as much ultra long haul flying where the 350 or the 777X plays well. It is a smaller plane, so you do hit some limits in terms of what you can get away with capacity-wise, but there, I think a big 330neo does well where 772 flies today.
But to buy 330neos and not have reactivated the 330ceo fleet,
yeah,
is a head-scratcher.
They're going fast. They're flying for Sun Fuquoc, whatever.
I know, but you could, like, if that was the direction you were going to go, you could have reactivated the bases. You could have gotten people back up to speed to fly those birds. Mm-hmm. And it gives you an easy way to introduce the Neos. But now you have to start from scratch.
You do. You sort of were starting from scratch anyways, though. You recreate the base. And the question then is the timeline. If you're buying them new, mm-hmm. When is Airbus going to be able to deliver them? And there's some challenges with that in general, but also Airbus has delays on new aircraft deliveries and their backlogs and whatever. If you're not getting these for 3 to 5 years anyways, you don't want to, pardon my French, dick around with a fleet of 20 or 12. It wasn't even that many. That was also a problem. There weren't that many CEOs around. So like, why do a tiny sub fleet for 3 years?
Because they needed the wide body capacity.
So you can right. So you can add random routes in Italy. Why not?
Exactly.
They're doing it. Yeah. Fine. I agree they need wide body capacity. I think they see it differently and are happily delaying that process.
Okay. So theoretically, where would these 330neos live? Chicago? Philly?
Philadelphia? JFK?
Because you can do shorter routes with them.
I mean, a 900 can go basically anywhere that they fly out of JFK, save, I mean, Right, it can do all the South America stuff. It can do all the Europe stuff. Where else do they fly? It could do Tel Aviv if it had to.
Can't do Delhi, though.
Can't do Delhi. That's the only one. Do they still run that?
I believe so.
Yeah. And but if they wanted to start anything new, I think JFK, Philly would be the places, and or Chicago. I mean, you should be starting stuff at Chicago if you can.
Put them in LA and run them to China and Japan.
Yeah. I mean, that could work. You can't do Sydney, right? It doesn't have the range.
No.
You could do Miami or Dallas into South America very easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do we know how many they've been rumored to buy or what they're looking at? We just don't know. It's just like it's been hinted at and no one said anything specific.
It sounds like the order is imminent, so we might know this week.
Are there any air shows going on?
No.
Okay. I was wondering if they would wait for an air show.
No. I mean, the U.S. carriers haven't done that in a while. Also, by way of air shows, the Bahrain air show, which was scheduled for November of this year, the Supreme Organizing Committee, which is literally what they call themselves, has agreed to delay it 2 years to enable international visitors to attend, because it turns out trying to schedule a major international air show while occasionally being attacked by missiles is difficult.
Well, I guess that's good. I like how it's 2 years.
So they alternate with Dubai.
Gotcha. So who's going to, are they going to have an air show to replace it, or is it just?
There won't be anything at that point this year, if that makes sense. So it's not working.
All right. Southwest. Let's talk about them. They announced their lounges, and it's Nashville, Austin,
BWI.
Honolulu.
Honolulu, which we kind of knew about, right?
All four of these we sort of knew from paperwork and leases and stuff that were signed by the airlines with the airports. Haneda and Delhi are the two ones that I think a 330 would have trouble with for them from the East Coast, but otherwise everything else I think is in range. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. These four will be available late 2027, so still a year away. You'll be shocked, I say shocked, to learn that the new premium credit card that is going to enable access is coming out early next year. Right now, per the release and per some conversations and rumblings and commentary from their comms team, the credit card's the only way to get in.
Not even...
I assume that they'll sell day passes eventually.
So, like, no status or buying a membership. It is simply a credit card.
Has not been mentioned yet. And see, more to come, quote unquote, but the credit card is the initial play. And if you think of it, think about what's making money for airlines these days. Well, nobody can answer that. Yeah, of course they're using a credit card for it. Like, they have a very strong relationship with Chase. Chase is going to launch a new super premium card for them. It's going to include access to the lounge. The lounges are being built in partnership with Chase and the Chase, Chase Sapphire Preferred, whatever, Reserve Lounge Network. But best I can tell, and they would not confirm one way or another, but it doesn't seem like the CSR card would get you access.
Okay.
And so at that point, like, what is the partnership really bringing? Because Chase just outsources all of its lounges anyways. But yeah.
So is it like the club?
Yeah.
By Chase? Okay. That's what's confusing to me. Like with Austin used to have a Chase lounge. It had like the Chase, I don't know. It was like the one that was like the quick access lounge. Like you could like go and grab things and it had like a terrace.
Okay.
And then they closed it. So maybe it's just going to take over that space and it's just going to be the same thing again. I don't know.
Yeah. One of the challenges is how big should any of these be and what makes sense? I will say it was interesting running some numbers. I'm going to see if I still have that open. I looked at some data on how big some of the operations were and which airports will, potentially have these lounges. And it looks like I was stupid and closed that spreadsheet. Sorry. But I want to say Southwest has something like 25 airports where it does more than 6,000 seats departing a day. And... like the big three, admittedly different business model and some of its legacy, but has lounges, like the number of places where they have lounges that are in smaller operations than what Southwest is starting with was rather surprising to me.
Hmm.
So,
Just not as many people as you would expect. Is that
So hang on, let me find. I got the number here. Okay, so and so here's what I wrote. Southwest has 20 airports with 6,000 plus seats departing daily, which I'd use as 180,000 monthly departing seats. And so, right, the big three has something like 80 or 90 airports in total. But you look at like United has lounges in Minneapolis, New Orleans, Philadelphia, Raleigh, San Antonio, and Orange County. Delta's got Charlotte, Palm Beach, Honolulu, Jacksonville, Memphis, Milwaukee, New Orleans, and Philadelphia. And American has Honolulu and Orange County. None of those have more than 100,000 departing seats for September 2027 or 26, excuse me. And all of them have lounges, right? At 200 seats per month, which is a big number, but that's about 6,000, 6,200, whatever, daily. There are 52 lounges by U.S. Legacies and 21 Southwest airports.
Do you think that they're just trying to do the math on how many people they think will sign up for the premium card?
Yes.
And not the passenger numbers? Because those,
It's a little bit of both, though, right? You put them where you have the most passengers, but also where you get the most revenue from those passengers. So, like, and where there's space. Like, one of the airports where Southwest has enough space or has enough passengers, arguably, is DCA. But they're certainly not going to put a lounge out in the old Banjo. Although, didn't Northwest have one down there?
I think so.
So there might be a space there while the construction's going on they could get on the cheap. I don't know if TSA took it over or something else, but there was a lounge down there. Right? Like, there are some interesting options available, and they could ostensibly make use of them. And at some level, like, it is just about getting people signed up on the credit cards, but you got to get people to, you get that by having enough passengers at a place, right? If you do 100 passengers a week or not a week, a day, you have one or two departures a day, you're probably not going to put a lounge there no matter what.
I have like some controversial opinions on all this. I'm not going to talk about it on the show.
I want to hear your opinion, Stephen.
I wish we could just stop tying all this crap to credit cards. I don't think it's, I don't know. Because I have a feeling it's not going to just be like you have the credit card. I have a feeling it's going to be like a minimum amount of spend on the card.
For guests.
For guests.
Yeah. I would bet that, isn't that, someone did that already, right? You get in Delta.
Yeah.
You get in for free, but after $25,000, you can bring guests.
But it might not happen initially, right? Because they need to get people into the lounge.
Yeah.
It might happen down the road.
Or they'll start that way because they've projected the demand, right? I mean, if you ask JetBlue said people bought that their terrible premium credit card to get access to their lounges before they had lounges open. They only just opened the second one 2 weeks ago, and people were already buying the card. Like, JetBlue also is charging Mosaic's $79 as a day pass. You can't buy it if you're not a card, paid card or elite member. You can't just walk up and buy access. And if you do have, if you're bottom elite or the $100 a year card, you can get in, but it's $79 a visit.
You know, at this point, I don't know if the lounges really are premium anymore. I feel more and more like being in the terminal, you're better off.
I'm kind of on the same boat, personally. I mean, sorry, I was about to sneeze. I feel like, sorry. I feel like some of the lounges are somewhat worth it, but some of the places I've been, it's like, well, if I'm going to wait to get in, I think Foz, you and I were in DFW. We walked by the Chase Lounge, the new Chase Lounge. And it was like, I don't know, 25 people waiting to go into this lounge. For what?
Boston gets backed up at the Chase Lounge peak departure time too.
For what? Like, you're not going to get any help on your, if your ticket has a problem. Like, that's to me, I think, Foz, we've talked about this before too.
For a free drink and a free meal, Stephen.
But is it even a meal? Like, it's kind of like, here, have some appetizers and get the hell out.
Chase Lounge, you can make a meal out of.
I had the supervisor at the San Diego Lounge tell me to get to the airport earlier so I could enjoy the lounge. And I'm like, I would just look at it. I'm like, what's the point of that?
But to relax before your flight, Mr. Mahmood.
Defeats the purpose altogether.
So I was in San Diego. I went to the Chase Lounge at San Diego. It's actually a really nice lounge. It's got like views of the tarmac and apron and everything. But everybody in there was either a person traveling for work who was clearly like working and didn't want you anywhere in their space. And it's a lot of like shared seating. So like they're like taking over like four chairs and you're like, this is the only place I can sit. Or it was like kids, I'll say in air quotes, 20s aged folks who got in on the lounge based on their credit card. And I'm like, guys, there's good food in the, like, why don't we just want to hang out in the terminal? I don't understand. like for the amount that you're paying a year to get in here and how many times you use it. Like, I would love to see people's math to justify something.
Well, here's my math. I'm canceling my Chase Reserve card this week. I called in, they hit with the new annual fee. I called and said, hi, I've been a member since it's launched and I'm not paying that annual fee anymore. Is there anything you can do for me? They said, we'd be happy to cancel it, Mr. Miller.
That's how many people have that card. They're like, yeah, whatever.
I don't put that much on it. I'm not surprised. And I did scale back my spend on it knowing that this was probably going to happen. So I strapped some of my automated payments onto different cards. So yeah.
You going Chase Sapphire Preferred?
I am. And I'm still keeping my cap, Venture Plus.
Yeah.
Venture X, whatever.
I'll probably do that at this renewal. Like, I just can't see the value.
Yeah, I certainly, and like, I like the lounge in Boston. It's nice, but I'll get over not having it. There's places I can sit that are quiet enough in the terminal and, you know, instead of walking over to I don't drink that much pre-flight. And instead of walking over and getting like popcorn chicken, however they happen to be serving it this week, there's a Japanese-ish restaurant downstairs that sells a bowl of karage fried popcorn chicken for $14. And so like,
maybe this comes down to like our fundamental idea of like what a lounge is. Like, to me, the lounge was a place to get a shower. Like, that's like United, the President's Club when I was first starting flying, to be able to get a shower on the way back from Europe or Asia or wherever was like the biggest perk to me. The food and drinks, I mean, those were nice, but like.
Well, but also remember, like, that was cheese cubes and Ritz crackers, and the food has gone upscale since then.
That's and Doritos. Let's not forget the Doritos.
What were the butter cookies?
Not the Biscoffs. The
shortbread. Walker's shortbread.
Walker's shortbread. Yeah. They were like riots when they ran out of that stuff in this continental land. I mean,
for me, the key thing about the lounge was a quiet place to sit down and work.
And it's not that anymore.
It is no longer that. It is like sitting in someone's freaking living room with the entire family over. And the airlines have done a horrible job of having quiet spaces.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, quiet space is theoretically what a lounge is good for, but when the lounge is so loud that there's no quiet space, it stops working.
Yeah, but like United, in some of the lounges, right, they put in the little phone booths, but then they limit you to 30 minutes or 60 minutes depending on the lounge. And there's just not enough. There's like two.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you need to take a call, the one place you could take a call, you can't be in there for longer than 30 minutes.
Or if you need to sit there and work because United delayed your bloody flight.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. All right. We've waxed poetic on this for too long. Anything else you guys want to chat about?
No.
Yeah, all right. Foz is going to tell us all about Polaris Studio and his experience going to Singapore and the bonus topics, as well as some Air Canada news and routes. We're going to talk about some new 330neos being delayed and a new TSA PreCheck potential feature. So we'll see what Seth has to tell us about that. But yeah, I think thanks to some new patrons, Boston Flyer and Harry. Thank you for joining and signing up. We appreciate it. And thanks to our listeners. We appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.